the screen what it is I'm going to read about. It starts with Moses being frightened, as we're told. And at the end, it gets very exciting, so listen out. On the day when the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, he said to him, "I am the Lord. Tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I am speaking to you." But Moses said in the Lord's presence, "Since I'm a poor speaker, why would Pharaoh listen to me?" And the Lord said to Moses, "See, I have made you like a god to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you. And your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and I will multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. When Pharaoh does not listen to you, I will lay my hand upon Egypt and bring my people, the Israelites, company by company, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch my hand out against Egypt and bring the Israelites from among them." Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as the Lord commanded them. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Perform a miracle, perform a wonder,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake.'" So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did as the Lord had commanded. Aaron threw down his staff before Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. Then Pharaoh summoned his wise men and the sorcerers, and they also, the magicians of Egypt, did the same through their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and they became snakes. But Aaron's staff swallowed up theirs. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Mike. That was great. It's like listening to a bedtime story. It was brilliant. You read it with so much expression. Fantastic. So, we sang right at the beginning of the service, "Our God is greater, our God is stronger. God, you are higher than any other." And maybe those words kind of rolled off our tongues quite easily, perhaps, because we know that song and we've sung it before. But what does that really mean? What did it really mean in Egypt, in the part of this story that we're exploring today? And what does it mean for us today? So what did it mean in Egypt? Well, we've explored that a little bit already. Venus told us really helpfully that Moses was God's mouthpiece, but he was scared and filled with self-doubt. He kept saying to God, "God, I don't think I can do this. Please send somebody else." We know that Pharaoh, the opposition, was hard-hearted and cruel, that he'd oppressed God's people and he wasn't listening to Moses. We know that the Egyptians had confidence in their gods, who they thought were going to be able to protect them from anything that the God of the Israelites could do to them. And so in human terms, a victory for the Israelites seemed very, very unlikely. But those of us who know the end of this story know that that is what happened. Eventually, Pharaoh did let God's people go. they ended up having to escape even more quickly because Pharaoh changed his mind again and then started to pursue them. But that's getting far too ahead of ourselves in this story. So God gives Moses special power. I think he first gives him a special sense of confidence for him to be able to kind of step out into this thing that he really didn't want to do. And then he gives Moses power, as we just heard Mike read for us, to do things that he wouldn't have been able to do in his own strength. So God gives Moses the power, and Aaron as well, to take their staff and to throw it on the floor, and then it becomes a snake. That sounds kind of like magic, doesn't it? And God sometimes, occasionally, gives people power to do things that seem like they wouldn't be able to happen otherwise, that they are impossible. But that's nothing compared to the power that God demonstrates when he sends those plagues, one after another after another. And it's almost as if, you know, I don't know whether any of you ever like playing dominoes where you line them all up and then you start off at one end and you tip them and whoosh, off they go. We quite like watching videos of like millions and millions of dominoes in our house being like whooshed down. Very exciting. If you can imagine all of those gods of Egypt lined up in a row, it's as if God says, he kind of begins at the beginning of the plagues and he kicks that row of dominoes down, and every one of those Egyptian gods topples and is no longer has the power that the Egyptians thought that they had. There are two things that when I read this story, as I have lots and lots of times, I've read it in the Bible, as I've been reading the Bible for myself, I've read it to my children, I've preached about it in churches. There are two things that stand out for me as big questions coming out of this story. And I'm not actually going to like address either of them in lots of detail today, but I'm going to name the questions that maybe you're sitting there thinking and encourage you to talk about those questions amongst yourselves and explore it together, because I'm not sure that there are easy answers. So by saying God is more powerful than all of these Egyptian gods, are we saying that there are lots and lots of gods, small g, in the world, but that our God, the God that we believe in, is the most powerful? Or do we want to say something different about our God? So hold that thought in your mind, and I'll come back to that briefly in a second. And the second is to do with our God, who you hear people standing up here Sunday by Sunday saying, God is loving, God is compassionate, God is faithful. And here we are saying, here's our loving, faithful, compassionate God sending 10 awful plagues on the people of Egypt. Do those things seem like a contradiction? Nod at me if you think, nod at me if you've ever thought about either of those two things when you've heard this story and thought, how do I make sense of that? Okay, I'm not seeing very many nods, but maybe it's just me that thinks about these things. What I want to say in relation to that second question is that I don't believe that natural disasters, that particularly those that we're experiencing today, are sent by God as punishment. That's not what I believe. I believe that what was happening here in Exodus was a very specific thing that happened at a very specific point in history that was much more about God showing his authority over the Egyptian gods than it was about punishing the Egyptian people. What we see if we read through the Exodus narrative is that God gave so many opportunities for Pharaoh to relent. And after every plague, it says Pharaoh changed his mind and hardened his heart. So I don't think that God was thinking, oh, how much misery can I inflict on these people of Egypt? But rather, I need Pharaoh and the Egyptians to understand that I am in control. Let's just whiz back to that first question about the other gods. That's maybe a can of worms, if you can imagine a big can of worms here. And I'm going to kind of take the lid off by just sort of posing the question and then allow the worms to escape out. If you want my opinion, I don't think that there are gods with a small g in this world that have power. And yet, other religions would say that they do pray to their gods with a small g, and things happen. And actually, when we read Exodus, that was the case, because it said in what Mike read for us this morning that the Egyptian magicians managed to do that same thing with their staffs and then turning into snakes. But then, if you noticed, the snake that had been made out of Aaron's staff swallowed up the snakes of the Egyptians. So I believe that our God is the only God. And that's what comes as we move through the Exodus story and God gives his people the Ten Commandments, the first of them. Our God is the only God, and our God is one. I'd love to talk to you more at the end, if that's just sparked some things in your mind about how we engage with Scripture and how we relate it to what we see in the world today. As I said, I'm making no apologies for opening a big can of worms and then not dealing with them in more full explanation, but I'd love to sit down and chat with you one-to-one about that. So, we have seen that God can show that he is in charge. So what does that mean then for us? Would we be the kind of people who would say, well, God's in charge of my life? Just think for a moment and think whether or not that's a statement that you would want to make about yourself. Is God in charge of your life? It is a statement that I would want to make about my life. I would like to say that I try and have God in charge. That means that when I make big decisions and when I make small decisions, I try and pause and stop and think about how God might want me to respond. But I know that sometimes, because I'm a human being and I make mistakes, God comes quite low down my list of priorities. I'm going to give you an example of how this worked out at a time in my life when there was something else driving me other than maybe what God wanted. That wasn't my highest priority. There was a time in my life when my highest priority was getting enough sleep. And I don't know whether or not any other parents can relate to this, but when Kezia and Malachi were young, and they naturally, because they were young children and babies, they weren't sleeping through the night, and they were getting up very early in the morning. My life, and Jono's life as well, became about having this routine that meant that for them, they were going. We could predict that if they'd had certain things in the day, and they'd not slept too much in the day, and they'd had enough to eat, that they were going to go to sleep all the way through the night. And then that became very important for me to make sure that I wasn't going to bed too late so that I wasn't too tired the next day. And I remember a moment when I thought, my goodness, my life has become a series of choices that are all about getting enough sleep. I'm not saying that getting enough sleep is a bad thing. It's a really good thing and it's a godly thing. But that shouldn't have been my top priority. There are other things that I find myself driven by. One of them is the desire to be on top of things, to make sure that kind of I know what I'm doing and I know when I'm going to do it and I'm in control. There might be other drivers that some of us have. It might be to earn enough money so that we can have a kind of a lifestyle that we want to have. Or it might be to pursue the kinds of things that we want to because we enjoy them or other things. I'm not saying that any of those things are wrong in and of themselves, but God calls his people to put him first. And when we put God first, we often find that he blesses us so much more than we ever expected. So the question today is God in charge of your life? Do you really believe that he is greater and stronger and higher than anything else in the universe? When you feel like you need help, is he the one that you turn to first? Or do you turn to something or someone else? Is God in charge? In a moment, Matt and the band are going to lead us in our next song. And as we sing that, I just encourage you to use this time to recommit yourself to God, or maybe even make that step for the first time of saying, God, I don't really know what this means, but I want you to be in charge of my life. and to trust that when we put God in his rightful place, he will bring good things for us, even when we face the hardest of times. So as we sing, why don't you use this time to reflect on that?
So please feel